In hindsight, all great ideas are obvious. The big ideas of today will become market-leading companies in the near future, reimagining every sector of the economy for the better. Climate, healthcare, food, transportation, housing, energy, and more. Welcome to Obvious Ideas, a podcast exploring the transformation of the fundamental building blocks of life and society. I'm Andrew Beebe, Managing Director at Obvious Ventures. This is episode 6 of our 8-part series on climate. We're digging into the biggest opportunities for founders and professionals in any industry to tackle our climate crisis. Today, we're speaking with Nan Rantzehoff, Head of Climate at Stripe. As part of her role, Nan leads Frontier, an advanced market commitment for carbon removal, which is funded by companies like Stripe, Alphabet, and Meta. Frontier aims to buy over $900 million of permanent carbon removal by 2030. In this episode, Nan breaks down why a company like Stripe is so committed to solving the climate crisis. She also shares what companies of all sizes are asking for when it comes to joining the climate fight. Welcome, Nan. Great to see you, meet you, and have you on the program today.
Thanks so much for having me.
What I love about your background is that I think it's fair to say you're OG climate because you were at Opower a long time ago. I think it's interesting that you started in more of a climate energy space and then got into sort of traditional tech companies helping on the climate front. So could you just describe a little bit how that journey took place?
Sure. So after undergrad, went a route many folks do and joined a management consulting firm, which was a great experience, but I quickly learned about myself that I am not problem agnostic. I care a lot about what I now call my 2 a.m. test. Would I be excited to work on this at 2 in the morning? And I thought that that might be climate. So at the time, I thought, well, I'm not a policymaker and I'm not a scientist. So what can I do with the skills that I have to try and make a dent on this problem? At the time, there weren't that many companies in the private sector that were a good fit for my skills. Opower and Nest were two of them. And I ended up getting a job at Opower, which was kind of, as you said, one of the first gen climate companies back in 2010, 2011. And that was my first foray into climate. And I learned that I really am motivated and care a lot about this space and have essentially spent the bulk of my career since in the private sector working on climate. You know, back in 2019, I read the 2018 IPCC report, and one of the things that jumped out at me was, in addition to emissions reduction, we are also going to need a huge amount of carbon removal to achieve global net zero. We are really far behind in doing that. And because I'm not a policymaker and because I'm not a scientist, the question that I sort of became obsessed with was, how do you create a market for carbon removal in the absence of policy? And it was that question that sort of really led me to Stripe, which I think, you know, to some might feel like an atypical place to do that from. But it was that sort of underlying question that sort of was the motivation for me in this latest role. But I think generally the private sector can and has to play a hugely catalytic role in addition to policy, in addition to science. But that's kind of always been my lens in, part just because of my background.
Before we jump into what Stripe Climate is, because it's such a fascinating story in this realm of, as you said, private companies and entities really playing a critical catalytic role. I'm sure you get this question a lot, but what kind of advice would you offer to people who are more in the traditional tech space and they're trying to find ways to jump over more holistically into the climate effort professionally? What advice do you have for them on how to make that transition?
Climate tech, quote unquote, is the entire economy, right? We are going to have to decarbonize everything from transportation to buildings to food to, you know, deal with land use. I mean, it's really all of it. And so what can be helpful is first building a general mental model of the space and then picking one or two areas that you're excited about and trying to go a bit deeper there. In general, I think there's sort of two ways to approach the job search in climate. One is the bottoms up way, go and find companies that you're excited about. But there are a lot of companies that don't yet exist, right? We are kind of early days in solving climate. The other way to approach it, and what led me to Stripe, was a more top-down approach. Understand the crux of the problem and then figure out where the best place to solve that problem might be. If we know that we need to decarbonize buildings, for example, some of these home sharing apps might actually be a really interesting place to do that from. They might not be doing anything in that today, but it could be interesting. if we need to, you know, switch everybody's stove from gas to electric, maybe going and doing that at Wolf is a really interesting way to do that, because these are, you know, companies with a huge amount of expertise that just haven't yet applied that to climate. So taking the top-down approach in a couple of areas that you're interested in can be really generative and I think open up new ideas and solutions that you might not see posted on somebody's job board yet.
Can you describe a little bit about Stripe's program, the origin of it, and the scope of it?
Yeah, so Stripe's foray into carbon removal specifically began as an ultimately small experiment back in 2019. It started with a blog post. It was called our negative emissions commitment to spend $1 million buying permanent carbon removal from promising early solutions. The thinking here was really grounded in the climate science. In addition to radical emissions reduction, we are also going to need to do a huge amount of carbon removal to achieve global net zero. And while both present an enormous challenge, we are particularly far behind on the second, in part because we didn't realize we were going to need to do as much of it as we now know we need to do. Part of the other problem with carbon removal is that, you know, while we have some of the solutions today, like planting trees and soil carbon sequestration, it's very unlikely that these by themselves are going to get us all the way there to the roughly 6 gigatons of removal that we need every year by 2050. There's this big gap. And the solutions to fill that gap are either non-existent or they're really expensive today. Early technologies tend to be expensive when they get started. This was true of solar panels, DNA sequencing, TVs, phones, Teslas. They're expensive at the beginning, but they get cheaper over time as they scale. So the thinking with this initial $1 million was, we are going to use it to buy carbon removal from promising solutions that have the potential to be low cost and high volume in the future, even if they're not there today. And as an early customer, we can help push these companies down the cost curve. After making our initial $1 million announcement, two things happened. One, the carbon removal community had kind of a weirdly positive reaction, which was mostly a testament to the fact that this field was so starved for customers that anybody cared about $1 million. The second thing that happened was we got a lot of outreach from Stripe users, basically saying, hey, we wanted to do something in climate for a while, but we haven't because it's hard to figure out what to do. If we send you some money, could you figure out what to do with it? Candidly, I was really surprised by how much latent demand and interest there is to do something climate beneficial. What we learned from talking to a number of folks is there is interest in doing something, but it is very frictionful to do something today. And it was those two things that ultimately formed the genesis of what is now known as Stripe Climate, where we make it really easy for any business to direct a fraction of their revenue to carbon removal. We, Stripe, pool those funds together and use it to buy even more carbon removal down the cost curve. We essentially said, how can we make a market for carbon removal in the absence of policy, or at least in the temporary absence of policy? 8% of businesses today that onboard to Stripe choose to direct a fraction of their revenue to carbon removal. Around 1% of their revenue is the sort of most common number. And that's amazing. I think that over time, this number hopefully will go up as we all realize that this is a collective action problem. We all are hoping to do something to make a difference here.
So I think a lot of listeners want to know, why did all this come from a payments company like Stripe? I mean, what was the motivation? And does this require a reimagination of the business model, or is this just part of doing business for you?
Stripe is, at the end of the day, in the business of economic enablement. Our mission is to grow the GDP of the internet. And so in that sense, climate change is actually one of the biggest threats to economic growth. If you take the long view, which we do as an infrastructure company, we believe that combating climate change is actually quite core to our mission at Stripe. In the short term, we are not profiting from any of this. In fact, we are, you know, quote unquote, losing a fair amount of money spending this on expensive carbon removal. We don't make any money through Stripe Climate, and we won't make any money through Frontier. But, you know, in the long run, we believe that this will help both Stripe and the millions of businesses that we work with.
How do you think about the balancing act there of low-cost carbon offsets versus more expensive verified direct air capture or removal of other forms?
We are really looking to fill the gap in supply that exists today. if we were going to solve climate change with $10 offsets, we would have done it by now. The supply isn't going to get there. And we can do all the fancy accounting and marketing we want, but we are ultimately competing over a limited set of supply. So the challenge that we were really interested in was, how do we pull more supply into existence? How do we get more solutions to the table so that in the future, in the coming decades, we have the portfolio of solutions needed to scale to the size of the problem? We are not focused on sort of low-cost traditional offsets right now. And what's interesting about how we've implemented Stripe Climate is companies choose to direct a fraction of their revenue, but it's not tied to a specific ton target. We have tens of thousands of businesses now that on average contribute 1% of their revenue to carbon removal. And we use those funds to pay $600, $1,000, $2,000 per ton from solutions that otherwise wouldn't have customers.
That's amazing. And how much money has come from those of your customers? How much of the money has come from them versus from the company directly?
Between Stripe and our users, so far we've spent $15 million on carbon removal today. And what's interesting is that right now, the field is supply limited. We are already at a relatively low volume buying carbon removal years into the future from a very small set of companies, which is crazy because, you know, 6 billion tons is roughly the equivalent of the United States annual emissions, right? It's a huge volume and we are basically at the starting line. So some of the motivating logic behind our latest announcement with Frontier is that we need to pull supply into existence at a much faster rate than we're seeing today if we want this industry to have a chance of scaling quickly.
I want to talk about Frontier in a second, but I also know that a lot of folks who are in large companies and trying to not jump ship and go to a climate startup, but instead change from within, are probably wondering, how is Stripe Climate structured? Do you report into the CFO? How do you think about the corporate structure and sponsorship at the executive level?
Stripe Climate is run as a product team. So the way that Stripe thinks about innovation generally is we tend to fund relatively small, self-sufficient teams with a clear mandate and the space to move. This is how a number of businesses at Stripe have been incubated. And we incubated Stripe Climate the same way. It's product, engineering, design, strategy, operations, all working together. And we're trying to protect those resources because if, you know, climate is competing with payments, for example, in a global stack rank, we lose every time, right? So we take a lot of care to protect those resources and make sure that these new burgeoning businesses have a chance to breathe and have a chance to sort of get off the ground. So we report into the product organization, which is, I think, a little bit different from how other companies might approach this.
I mean, I've often said, with love and respect for the chief sustainability officers who have really carried a lot of water for the last probably two decades, I look forward to a world where those people are just melded into the organization. They're essentially, that title doesn't exist. And there's either a CFO, a financially oriented sponsorship, or even better, a product oriented sponsorship, even if you're Unilever. You know, Unilever right now is really driven by the CFO when they think about climate. But the more that they can just embed it, recognizing their customers want this kind of offering, the more we're going to see it actually manifest in ways that benefit all the stakeholders, not just sort of a compliance type role.
I think that's right. I also think, riffing off of that, there's a spectrum in how companies can think about their climate engagement. And I think on one end of the spectrum is kind of doing the minimum to deal with the emissions that they're responsible for. But the other side of the spectrum is really understanding, where are you and where are we in the ecosystem of climate, and what can we do to accelerate decarbonization? If you're a ride-sharing app, you potentially can make huge waves in accelerating the shift towards electric vehicles. If you are selling flights, you can potentially help change consumer choice in what flights actually get chosen. So I think there's a big opportunity for creative thinking around, what assets does my company bring to bear here, and how can we use those to accelerate the transition to a clean economy?
Yeah, so let's talk about that. As you said, you know, you started with a million and now you're butting up against a billion by bringing more people around the table and making these future commitments. Can you talk about Frontier and what that effort is?
The thinking for Frontier came from a few observations, namely that even despite the huge amount of progress in the carbon removal space over the last few years, this field is still super far behind. And part of what we noticed, as we just discussed, is there's a massive supply shortage. And part of that supply shortage comes from the fact that there has been legitimate uncertainty around whether there are going to be buyers for carbon removal, especially early stage carbon removal. If you are an entrepreneur, why would you start a company if you don't think anybody is going to buy the thing that you're selling? If you're an investor, why would you invest in a company that you're not sure is going to have a revenue stream? The lack of customers in carbon removal has created widespread paralysis. And that is obviously the problem that we were trying to start unlocking with this $1 million and then the subsequent $15 million. But we have to compress with climate and with carbon removal 10 to 15 years worth of progress into the next 3 to 5. And if you want to do that, you need a different set of interventions than those that exist today. What's neat about an advanced market commitment, and this is a concept that we borrowed from vaccine development, is that you can send a loud demand signal to entrepreneurs, to scientists, and to researchers before you, quote unquote, pick the technologies. You can send a technology agnostic demand signal. So in 2007, governments and philanthropists decided to pool $1.5 billion into a pool to say, hey, if you can build vaccines to this spec, we will subsidize them, you know, up to this amount. And it worked. We think that that can work for carbon removal too. And this was really the thinking behind what is now Frontier. We're going to be spending an initial $925 million to purchase carbon removal over the next 9 years to try to pull more supply into existence.
What was it like recruiting, without naming names, recruiting those companies to join you? And how do you think about bringing more people into the fold for that advanced purchase commitment?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we talked about early on was what is the right initial number for this? Because with the vaccine case study, $1.5 billion sort of represented the whole market. With carbon removal, we know that's not the case. By 2050, if this is $100 or even call it $10 a ton, at 10 billion tons a year, we're talking $100 billion to $1 trillion per year in market size. Obviously, you know, this is $1 billion over 9 years. We are going to need a massive private and public effort here to scale this market. So we kind of came up with $1 billion because it sounded big and it's a lot bigger than we have today, but, you know, it's a little arbitrary. We've talked to maybe, I don't know, 50 or 100 companies. We had a very high initial bar for participating because we hadn't done this before. We wanted to keep the group quite small, but there's a lot of interest here. And our hope is that this next phase, we'll be able to add a zero to that initial $1 billion through a combination of more companies joining and also potentially working with public entities to help and scale this market.
And if they, just to walk through the commitments they've made, have they made a commitment to buy verifiable direct air capture credits or tons of removal at a certain price at a certain time or just at a certain time?
No. The way that this is structured is extremely flexible. So there isn't a price target and there isn't a ton target. Money comes in, tons come out, and every company gives us a demand schedule of the maximum amount that we can spend in a given year. Anybody who tells you that they can perfectly predict the price and the tons per year is lying to you. I mean, that's it's just not possible at this point. And so we are really trying to meet this field where it is and be honest about what we can and can't know at this stage so that we have maximum flexibility to catalyze this field while also doing right by the many different contributors and stakeholders about sort of sharing here's what we feel confident in, here's what we don't. For example, we don't really know yet how we are going to do robust, scalable measurement and verification for this field. Knowing that you sunk a ton of kelp is very different from knowing that you are, you know, injecting a ton of bio oil underground. We don't have the methodologies and principles yet and operations yet to do that at scale. We have to figure that out. And so we are very, you know, open on our website of how are you going to do MNV? Well, we're not sure yet, but that's not going to stop us from starting to build, because we could figure that out in parallel so that when this field has some reasonable liquidity, we will hopefully have by then figured out the MNV piece.
And for listeners who don't know, MNV is measurement and verification.
Exactly.
And just to be clear, Stripe might equity invest in a company, but that pool of money from Frontier is not going into equity, right?
Exactly. These are customer dollars. We don't get a return, and, you know, some form of philanthropy and climate fund.
And you're actively recruiting more members, right? So if Unilever is listening and they want to get in on this, you're open for business.
Big time. Yes. Send us an email.
Awesome. And you're running that? You have a dual role?
Exactly. So I run Stripe Climate as well as Frontier. And we are actively hiring for folks in Frontier across a pretty diverse set of roles. We have some exciting roles in policy and science and program management, commercialization. So this is going to be a new team that we are spinning up and working to actively put together.
Well, there's the answer for people wondering how they're going to make the transition into climate, right? If people are out there and know how corporations think and want to jump over, that might be a really interesting kind of role. Okay, I would be remiss if I didn't ask about, as people come at you, some of the largest companies in the world come to you to talk about how they could participate in this advanced purchasing, are you asking that they commit to the Science-Based Targets Initiative or something like that, which states that they're going to do most of their work for carbon removal and abatement internally, in addition to their purchasing of offsets and removal credits?
I don't think it's our role to actively police what an individual company is doing. I think it is our role, and is the role of anybody working in carbon removal, to be very vocal that this is not a silver bullet by any stretch of the imagination, and that carbon removal by itself is not going to get us there, full stop. We have to pursue radical emissions reductions in addition to carbon removal. It is a yes and situation. But yeah, I'm not sure it's our role to sort of like actively police that.
So we've talked a lot about carbon dioxide removal from the atmosphere, but what other areas, when you look out at the landscape of startups, what areas are you excited about that you think need more entrepreneurial focus?
Well, I'll say that, you know, within carbon removal, there's still a huge opportunity for creative new solutions. And there's a couple of different categories that I'm hoping to see more innovation in. One is really around the intersection of nature and technology. I think there's been this false bifurcation between nature-based solutions and technology solutions. For example, how can we harness the best of what nature does for free, which is it does the capture piece for free and it self-replicates for free. Hardware does not self-replicate for free. The problem is that nature-based solutions tend to not be permanent, and they tend to take up a lot of space. You know, Running Tide is an interesting example of a solution at the intersection between those two, because it is growing biomass on functionally rope in the middle of the ocean and then sinking it to the ocean desert floor, so to speak. And I think there's likely a lot of interesting solutions in synthetic biology, for example, that I'm hoping that we start to see more of over the coming months and years.
Living carbon is such a great example of that, right? Trees that are enhanced with science, but are natural solutions.
That's right.
We ask every one of our guests the same question. In hindsight, all great ideas are obvious. Come 2030, what are we going to look back on as an obvious idea that today seems totally crazy?
I hope we look back on like single-use plastics and trash consumption is one of those things. I feel guilty every time I take out, you know, we use so much trash every single week. It is completely crazy that we are, you know, drinking a single cup of water and throwing out the plastics. I haven't seen so many companies working on this, but I hope somebody is working hard on this, because it seems totally bananas to me.
Single-use plastics, I love it. Well, Nan, great to have you on the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a really fun conversation.
That was Nan Rantzehoff, head of climate at Stripe. We hope you have a great Memorial Day weekend. We'll be back after the holiday with Dr. Rachel Slabaugh, a nuclear expert and investor at DCVC.
Could you solve climate change without wind? Sure. Could you solve climate change without nuclear? Sure. Is it easier to solve it with all the tools in the tool belt? Yes.
Obvious Ideas is produced by Obvious Ventures in partnership with Pod People. Obvious invests in purpose-driven founders reimagining trillion-dollar industries. To learn more about us and where we invest, head to obvious.com. Special thanks to our production team, Gabe Kleiman, Aniko Steffen, and Emily Brady from Obvious, and the team at Pod People, Rachel King, Amy Machado, Emily Shaw, Madison Lusby, and Jason Mack. I'm Andrew Beebe. Thanks for listening.